Today is February 20th, 2019. This is episode number 502 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO and a man being confronted by life's unrelenting pursuit of reality. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can join us on Facebook at, believe it or not, macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you right to our group over on Facebook. Now, on this day, this particular day, I am joined by a woman with a funny accent and a great love of tea, crumpets, fish, chips, and, as I understand it, curry. She's written for many publications and covers the tech space for TMO. From the other side of the pond, she also has a book coming out this June called Not Buying It, which comes with the instructions not to follow the instructions. And this is the first time she's been on the Apple Context Machine. So I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Charlotte Henry.
Thank you very much. Yes, all those descriptions of my eating habits are 100% accurate.
Excellent. I'm glad to see that our cultural stereotypes are applicable.
100%.
Do you actually like curry?
Love curry. Went for one on just the other night.
Fantastic. I threw that in on a hunch. It turned out my hunch was correct.
Very correct.
Now, what is also correct is we have a sponsor today, and that's Keeps. And I'm going to be telling you about it later. Pretty excited about it. But first, we have some stuff to talk about.
We have many things to talk about.
Well, I'm stoked to have you here. Now, here is a confession, Charlotte.
Hit me.
You're the first female co-host I've had.
Brian.
Yep. Now, Brian, to be fair, for 490 episodes, there were just two hosts.
Okay.
Right. So
you can almost be excused.
So having a co-host of the week is a new phenomenon.
Sure.
So, I hadn't had a woman yet anyway.
I wasn't going to pick you up on that. I was going to let it go.
Oh, it's funny because it hurts. All right. So, let's see here. Our first.
I don't know how we're going to carry on with this. This is how the show starts.
This is how Well, this is the Apple Context Machine. This is, pretty much this is par for the course.
This is how we roll.
This is how we roll. Right. Okay.
Two and a half minutes and it's chaos.
Exactly. And speaking of chaos.
Yes.
We have Apple and its pursuit of content. Let me start off with the question. Is that actually the pursuit of services?
So I think the two are completely intrinsically linked. I think they're so linked that you can't really differentiate between the two to any meaningful sense.
Well, okay, back that up.
Okay. So we know that Apple is going to be investing in original content. It's also going to be providing a service on which you can get that original content.
And we're talking about video content.
In this case, video, yes.
Yes.
We also know that it is, we think, developing a subscription Apple News service, whilst also finally expanding Apple News to other countries, including Canada, who looks like if we... I reported on a new beta for iOS 12.2 that came out yesterday.
Hold on. Beta?
Stop it.
Actually how you pronounce the word beta?
Yes.
Beta? Is that the British pronunciation?
B-E-T-A. Yes. Beta testing, beta test. Yes.
So like Sony had
I've
the
broken
Betam-
Brian. My accent has actually broken Brian.
The like Sony had the Betamax.
Yeah.
Is that and that was that's how you guys said it? It was Betamax.
Betamax, yeah.
Huh. All right. Anyway, you were talking
true
about
story. True
you were,
story.
You were talking about the beta. But go ahead. So like every time you hear
so
us
Apple
say beta testing or a beta, you're like, ha ha ha! You guys don't know how to pronounce it. Ha.
I think that about many things, Vern.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
So they seeded this to developers. I think yesterday we're seeing 12.2 being seeded to developers. It said that it looked like Canada is going to be one of the places that now will have Apple News, yep. Which is kind of remarkable. It never had Apple News already, but yep. Anyway,
it's going
to be in French and English.
Yep.
Then we also know there's going to be an app. It looks like there's also going to be an Apple News subscription service,
which is unrelated to the rollout in 12.2.
Correct.
Or but might be unrelated, actually. It's probably a better way of putting
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because some of the stuff, like it hinted at it. The 12.2 stuff we've seen has hinted at a few to come.
Yeah, but we know that news... And we're mixing up our conversation. We're not mixing up, but we're mixing in our conversations here about a couple of different things. But we know that newspaper publishers have not signed on to the paid subscription service yet. So the likelihood of the paid subscription service being included in 12.2 is, in my opinion, slim to none. I think it's coming.
Yeah, I mean we're not seeing it. We're not going to be able to see it. Like, in it's going to be months, not weeks, till we see it.
The paid service,
correct.
But the Canadian rollout of Apple News, could in fact be
that's its official title.
Should be. In weeks.
Yes.
That's the usual. That's the usual pattern for Apple's beta releases.
That sounds right. So my point is, and you're right to say that we're kind of mixing it all together, but I think the broader picture is all mixed together because it's doing all these various things that we're going to see over coming weeks and months. And it is all a services play, but those services are all related around content.
Yes, in very different ways, right? There's a world of difference between providing a subscription service distribution platform and providing your own original video content. They're worlds apart.
Yeah, one is very expensive and one is not.
Yeah, or less so.
Yeah, I mean, it's very expensive. So it's very expensive for Apple to make films and TV shows, it's less expensive for it to make a subscription news service. But my point is, and I've really felt this the last few weeks, it's really ramped up, that Apple sees media as a whole, whether it's, like you say, the original video content, whether it's subscription news, whether it's expanding the countries Apple News will be in, any of those things, it is really seeing that as a very important part of its future.
Yeah, here's the question though, why?
Well, the obvious answer, the quick answer is that it's selling less iPhones, so it needs to find other revenue streams. I don't think it's quite as simple as that, because I think it's going to take a ridiculously long amount of time, and it may even be impossible for media-based services to ever replace the revenue generated by the iPhone.
They cannot. It is impossible for that to happen.
It's impossible. Yeah. Yeah.
But Apple can sort of even out its. More even out its revenue. Oh, how am I trying to say this? It can better diversify its revenue by increasing services, and it can also, in that services have the potential to be much more profitable than even an iPhone in percentage terms, it can have a meaningful impact on profits. But it services cannot replace iPhone. It can only sort of help even out Apple's annual revenue distribution.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, that's right.
But here's the thing.
But it has realized it needs to do that evening out.
Well, yeah, I think they've probably known that for quite a while. As a matter of fact, the story that was making all the headlines was, I think, from the Wall Street Journal this week. Mm. And it noted that Apple CEO Tim Cook has been concerned about iPhone's potential for flattening since 2010.
Okay, yeah. Well, and that would make sense.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, okay, you're relatively new to the Apple world, at least compared to me. Correct?
Oh, well, I've used Apple computers a long time.
Long time, but go ahead.
Okay. I've used Apple services for a good number of years. I've been interested in the company for a good number of years, but yes, it's probably less number of years than you.
Okay,
I dare suggest such a thing.
Yeah, right. I'm old, and you are young, and this is good. This is good. This is one of the things I love about having you on TMO is that you bring a newer, frankly, fresher perspective than some of us who have been doing this for a very long time. You and Andrew both have that quality, and I have loved it immensely. My point was not to denigrate me for being older, you for being young, but more like those of us who have been around for a long time, especially those of us who came to Apple fandom because of the Mac, specifically for the Mac, as it was the only thing that Apple was doing, have largely worried about Apple's ever decreasing attention. I was going to say focus, but that's not the problem. It's seemingly the lack of attention paid to the Mac. And one of the things that Apple has always done really well is that when it would introduce new products or services, it was always designed to enhance the ecosystem, to keep you in the ecosystem, keep you buying hardware. And
yes,
this Apple's plan, goal to double services, I think by 2020 or 2021, I forget which, and this is the Apple context machine, so, you know, no research. But I think it was by 2020. That is a different mindset. The idea of adding services in order to get extra revenue is a world apart from adding services to better enhance the ecosystem.
Yeah, but the days of being able to have services to enhance the ecosystem are over, and they have been since the devices became so expensive people are not buying them every year or 18 months. I'm talking to you using a mid-2010 MacBook Pro. I haven't bought a MacBook Pro for 8.5-9 years, but I would only ever have a MacBook Pro as my main computer.
Yeah.
So if you're charging whatever it is in the UK, £1,200, I think those devices are that kind of range we're talking.
For a MacBook Pro, it's more than that. Surely.
Well, yeah, and for various Apple devices.
Okay, go ahead.
But if you're talking that's serious money. People are not buying that every even 2 or 3 years. That's serious money. I've nursed this baby for, yeah, like I say, 8.5-9 years to keep it going. And so if you're not making expendable hardware, you have to find other sources. You just have to. If you're going to continue to charge the amounts Apple charges for the iPhone, people are not going to renew it every year or even every 2 years. And so they have to understand that services are the way to keep customers engaged in between the times where they buy the very big products. I see no other solution for them.
Well, the other solution is, of course, to upgrade, in particular, Macs every year, so that, like, I want to get a new iMac, something that I tended to touch on a lot during recent Apple Context Machines, but I'd like to get a new iMac, but I'm not paying brand new prices for two-year-old technology. I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
And the other thing is that the decision to have ever more expensive devices, that is a decision. That is not a requirement.
Correct.
And I've said also on recent shows, but I've never said it to you, I have recently begun to worry that on the iPhone in particular, Apple has switched from making the device that it wants to make and charging based on cost to a model where Apple is designing to a price point. Like, okay, we need to have a $1,000 iPhone. So what do we need to put in it to make it worth $1,000? That I have an ongoing concern that sort of transition has taken place within Apple. And I hope that I've also said this. I hope that I'm wrong about that.
Well, I personally think they have. Yeah, look, we know in the Steve Jobs days that he would say, I want this, this, and this, and this, and how, you know, he would make the Apple. He would say, look, I want this, this, and this, and device, and it has to be perfect, and it has to have this, and that would rack up the cost of the devices. Maybe that flip that you're describing has happened. I don't know. We don't know.
It's not even speculation on my part. It's a worry on my part.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. But the concern, never mind, whatever the reality is, whatever the reason is, these devices are freaking expensive. And so you have to expand your ecosystem to other stuff. Otherwise, you're not going to have customers regularly giving you revenue. It can't happen. I can't see any Apple device with the current price points, a main Apple device, not an accessory, that you're going to want to buy every, most people are going to be able to afford to buy every year or 2 years. These are expensive top-end items. And to be fair to Apple, they do last a long time because they're top-end items. They're not.
Yeah, there aren't many 8-year-old PC laptops that are still being used. And your laptop is coming up on 9 years.
Right, exactly. No, I think that's a fair point. Apple, in a way, Apple's been a sort of victim of its own success by building products that last. And they do last. And when they don't last, they have largely a pretty good servicing plan. But the point is, if you're doing that as your business model, you have to have other stuff. And that's why I think it is going into this services mold. It's also seen, let's not forget, it's seen Amazon say shift from being the company that does that goes from Amazon was the company that delivered books to the company that delivered everything to the company that made original TV on Amazon Prime as well. Its rivals have developed and evolved, and I think Apple is realizing it needs to as well.
Well, this is absolutely true. This is absolutely true. And we have the other piece. I think we're going to talk about this later. Is that correct? Yeah, we have this other piece looking at how Tim Cook has been shaping Apple for tomorrow, which involving the various shuffling around of executives, and we're going to get to that in a bit. So, yeah, obviously Apple can't stand still. Although, ironically, it lets its hardware stand still, but whatever. And
you really want that new iMac, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Every year, I want new models of every Mac every year. Should not be hard. It should not be hard. It should not be hard. Doesn't have to be just new processors, new GPUs, more RAM every year. That's all we need. That's all we need to make us Mac users happy.
All right. Okay, but you wouldn't buy a new one every year.
It's beside the point. When I want to buy, okay. I want to buy a new one.
Okay, yeah, fair.
Right? And you know, it's the object for any hardware maker should not be to get its customers buying new stuff every year. That's not realistic. But when a customer's ready to buy, they should be able to buy new stuff. So we're theoretically talking about Apple and publishing and video content. One of the things that I think it was Barry Diller, who is an old media exec, old school media exec, recently said that Apple's going to fail with its video content, that they can't beat Netflix. Netflix has already won.
Okay, but we also said no one would buy an Apple MP3 player.
And?
I mean, the iPad. A smartphone. iPod.
Yeah. Yeah, can't compete in smartphones. I mean, like, the phone. No. The, you know, yeah, there's no way Apple can make a smartphone. That's a joke. That's a joke. The hardware, the handset industry, there's no profits, and Apple doesn't know what it's doing. That's what we heard.
Correct.
And this was in 2007, once Apple actually announced the iPhone. And we heard the same thing about MP3 players.
Yep.
And we've heard the same thing about watches.
Yep.
And we have repeatedly heard the same thing with cars, although Apple has not actually introduced its own car yet, but we know that Apple's working on a car. And,
for sure.
And here's the interesting thing about that particular statement from Mr. Diller. Streaming content is not a zero-sum game. Right? To say that Netflix has already won says that there is a limit to the number of customers and the amount of revenue. And that's not the case.
No, so I don't think there's a limit to the number of customers and to the amount of revenue. I think there is a limit to the number of subscription services any individual will take out.
Yes, but it's not one.
But it isn't one. That's true.
That's the thing. So this idea that Netflix has already won is not based on a little thing that I mentioned at the top of the show, which is reality.
No. The thing is, though, so Netflix is established. That's fine. And Apple can beat an established player. People may decide they want to take their second subscription, or even their main subscription will be Apple. The thing Apple is not doing, to my mind, is investing enough money in that original content. If you are deadly serious about taking on Netflix and Amazon Prime, you have to put more money in than Apple has.
I understand where you're saying there. I would point out that Netflix's original investment in original content was roughly the same. It increased that over time, but it was roughly the same. The same thing with Amazon.
But the game has changed. We expect, if you're producing original content, we have very high expectations now as consumers of what this original content will look like.
This is absolutely the case. However, Charlotte, I think that if you try to throw too much money around all at one time, you're going to end up buying crap. There's only so many great new shows that you can buy at a time. And I think that's probably the basis of the limitation. Or develop, but by, almost all of the shows that Apple has been signing have been developed by third-party production houses.
Yeah,
or pitched by.
It's kind of got a relationship with a team around Oprah, hasn't it, for example?
Well, yeah, it is not. Yeah, there's lots of them. Reese Witherspoon has her own production company. She's doing something with Apple. And it's not
Apple Eddie Original Q. Productions does not exist.
Eh, it kind of does. But it's been a failure.
Not to the level,
what's going on right now. What Zach and Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg, am I getting his name right?
That one.
Zach Van, what's his name? Yeah, back to Zach Van Amberg. What they're doing is they're buying shows that are being pitched and or developed and or produced outside of Apple. And there's only so many shows that you can buy at any one time. There's only so much like the executives who are doing this only have so much time to spend on X amount of shows. And then once they get those, then they can keep buying. And they can keep buying, and they can keep buying. And that's what the other houses have done. And I imagine that that is the source of this $1 billion investment that Apple put up the first year for new content, that's the source of that limitation, that it's not that Apple was only willing to spend $1 billion. It's that they know that if they try to spend more right out the gate, that they're going to end up buying some crap.
Yeah, and as a company, Apple has never worried so much about being last. It's worried about being right. You know, it didn't put out the first MP3 player, but it made the best one. It didn't put out the first smartphone, but it made the best one. So I can well imagine that having not made the first original content video streaming service by a long way, it's determined that it's going to maintain the quality.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
I totally get that.
And we also know that for years...
But think of it this way, Brian. If you're a TV exec or producer and you've got a new show and you want to sell it to probably one of the digital companies, but you hear Apple has got $1 billion, but you also know that Amazon and Netflix are kind of swimming in money, who are you going to go to?
What are you talking about? Apple's swimming in money. Those other companies have a lot of money. Yes. Apple's swimming in it.
Yes, but not in that field. It's not putting it in that field.
I understand what you're saying. I completely disagree with the premise. If I need $100 million for my show, I don't care how much money the company that's going to pay me $100 million is spending on other shows, as long as I can get my $100 million for my show.
Yeah, but you know that the $100 million is probably more likely readily available at Amazon or Netflix than it is Apple, surely.
I don't think it works that way. That's not how it works. They're gonna say, I want, you know, I've got the show, how much are you going to give me for it? And if Amazon says $110 million and Hulu says $105 million and Apple says $90 million, well, they're probably going to go with Amazon, probably, depending on what else comes along with it, like, you know, like what kind of marketing they're going to do, that sort of thing, right? But as long as the producer can get the money they want for their show, I don't really think it matters how many other shows are being produced. Plus, again...
If there's less shows being produced and there are less people on the platform, so less people are going to see your show. Now, you could always have made that argument with Netflix and Amazon Prime, particularly Netflix, actually, at the beginning, that people were like, what is this weird streaming thing? No one's going to watch TV on a streaming thing. And obviously that was nonsense.
Yeah, and Hulu, like all these companies were able to get people signed. Apple's been able to get people signed. So what are you talking about? Apple has signed shows. Therefore, it's working.
It's got Oprah. You can't get many bigger stars than Oprah in the world. And that's fine. But I think that I can understand that some producers might still have some reservations about being involved in Apple original content. And maybe when we see the shows that you rightly say that have already been signed, maybe when we see them, when we see the platform, when we see it be a success, TV execs are going to be queuing up in Cupertino.
They're already queuing up. Listen, here's what my biggest worry would be as a show producer. Cool. And a star. In working with Apple. And that would be that Apple is going to meddle. That would be my concern. Like, for instance, Apple forcing Carpool Karaoke to edit everything and take profanity out.
Yeah, I think, but
which was just a catastrophic mistake.
Yeah, pathetic. But there's always a risk whenever with anything. If you have a TV show on a mainstream linear TV channel, they can meddle with it.
Yeah, it's true. However, other platforms. This is where other platforms might have an advantage. For instance, Netflix has been fairly infamous for letting its showrunners do what they're going to do.
Sure.
And yeah. I don't know that I would trust Apple to let me do what I want to do. Now, admittedly, that should all be spelled out in the contract. And so you should be able to approach that relationship with open eyes and fully armed with knowledge and be able to make your decision on whether or not you're going to do with it based on that.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. Like I say, I just think for showrunners want eyeballs. Apple is going to have to prove it can get eyeballs. Yeah, it may well.
But Apple can get eyeballs. Are you kidding me? Come on. Apple can get eyeballs. Look at Apple Music. Like, everyone was like, you know, Apple Music's not going to be able to beat Spotify.
And it still trails Spotify hugely.
Doesn't matter. It's getting... But it has tons of listeners. And those listeners are all Apple devices. And Apple device owners happen to be the most desirable listeners.
Yes. But it also happens to have a lot less listeners. It also has a lot less listeners than Spotify still, even though it has, by any objective standard, been a success, Apple Music.
Yeah, it has been growing faster than Spotify.
Correct.
And it's limited to platforms. It's on Android, so that's not really a limitation.
Yeah, you can get it on.
Yeah, Android. You can get it on Android, so that's not really a limitation. My point is that Apple has a baked in audience. There is a percentage of we Apple customers who are going to subscribe to Apple's subscription service, no matter what, at least when it starts out. We're certainly going to try it. We're certainly going to try it. So no one in the production business is worried about Apple being able to deliver eyeballs.
Take your word for it.
No one. As a matter of fact, if you go back, I don't know when you started following Apple from a content standpoint, but Apple has been rumored to be working on some kind of streaming video platform for years. And Apple was stymied. We had many, many leaks coming out of both Apple and the movie and TV end of the business, talking about Apple working on doing like an a la carte. They were really focused on doing an a la carte streaming service for a long time.
A what?
A la carte.
Now this is me take my chance to comment on your accent.
Je parle français, je te dis pour 3 ans et demi.
So this is my revenge.
If you really want to get into the French accent, we can do that. But how would you say a la carte?
A la carte.
Okay, let's go with that. So Apple has been working on that for a long time and was stymied by the studios and networks who did not want to cede control of the customer to Apple.
Yeah, in the same way we're seeing that with news, aren't we, at the moment?
But they were never worried about Apple's ability to deliver eyeballs. They were instead worried that Apple would take control of the relationship like it did in the music world. In other words, they were pissed off that Apple saved the music world, and they didn't want Apple to similarly disrupt the traditional relationships in the TV and movie distribution business. And they didn't need to let Apple do it because, unlike the music industry, they were sitting pretty and making lots of money. So I don't think my point
are
is.
Are you
is
saying
that,
studio heads are control freaks?
Yes.
Wow.
So I don't think anyone in the content business is worried about Apple being able to deliver eyeballs and ear holes. I accept your apology.
No. Stop being wrong.
I'm not wrong. I'm absolutely 100% on this. No one is worried about Apple being able to deliver eyeballs. No one.
I think when you're seeing the numbers that Netflix and Amazon Prime are getting, I can understand why content producers would take a second look and go,
they don't care.
Is this the right platform for us?
That's like saying no one's going to do business with HBO because they don't have a large enough numbers of subscribers. They didn't care because HBO was paying the money. HBO today is a lot smaller than Netflix, I think. Is that true? I have no idea if that's true.
It depends how you count it, because we get HBO content here as part of Sky Atlantic. It depends how you count it, probably.
Yeah, let's see here. HBO versus Netflix. Business Insider has a piece. HBO is taking a couple of cues from Netflix. Go away. I see this chart from Statista. All right, so this is through 2015, which is years out of date. Netflix is doing more. As of 2015, Netflix was doing more revenue than HBO. Yeah, okay, this is working to my point, but had fewer subscribers as of 2015. Anyway, the point is HBO can get any show that it wants to pay for because they'll pay for it. And I've listened to lots of interviews with various media execs and showrunners and show producers and stars and writers who have talked about getting their show on HBO, and they talk about the fact like HBO is the only place where we could do this show, and they let us do what it is that we do. Right? They didn't. What they didn't say is, well, we were concerned about HBO's audience size.
Okay. Well, let's see if Apple can make that offer to showrunners.
That is a fair point.
Let's see. Look, if Apple thinks it can be a kind of digital HBO or whatever, go for it. Great. Let's see.
Here's my question.
I accept your apology.
No, you didn't get one. and I also stand as still right on these points. But here's my deeper question. My deeper question is Apple going to also offer legacy catalog shows and movies?
I think it has to. That's how Netflix
Netflix came at it the other direction.
Yeah, it had all the catalog stuff first, didn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think to have enough to be able to offer customers enough content that it's worth their signing up, I think you have to have some of the archive stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder about that. Because, after being stymied by the networks, Apple tried to develop its own shows. Mm-hmm. Right? It's produced and paid for several documentaries, a few original shows like the much maligned Planet of the Apes and Carpool Karaoke, which I have been largely disappointed by, not entirely disappointed, but largely disappointed by. And now, of course, Apple switched to hiring these execs to deliver quality original programming from the industry. And I really wonder if it's going to do the legacy stuff. And of course, I have. It sounds like a large machine out in front of my home, making all kinds. Do you hear that?
No.
You don't hear the noise?
No.
Oh, great. All right. Well, then I'm just crazy. Fantastic. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But I think that Apple's video service will be a success. And I think its shows will be good despite despite Apple's theoretical focus on not edgy content.
I'm never going to, given the examples we made of the iPod and the iPhone, you're not going to get me betting against Apple. I just think it's going to have to jump over a lot of hurdles to win. But don't doubt for 1 minute it can.
Yeah, all right. Okay, we have gone way over on this topic. Way, 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 way over on the topic. So let me take a second to tell you all about our sponsor. Losing your hair sucks. I'm vain. I care about my hair. I will happily admit it. I want my hair. That's why I'm super excited about Keeps sponsoring the Apple Context Machine. Now, at Keeps, you can get the two FDA-approved products for hair loss. And they'll ship them right to your door. It's super easy to sign up. I went through this process. It's super easy. You create your account. You answer a few questions about yourself. You take a couple pictures, I think three pictures of your hair, and hit submit. And within 24 hours, you're going to hear back from a licensed physician, a physician that's been licensed to practice medicine in your state, who reviewed your information and recommends the right treatment for you. And then they'll ship it right to your door every 3 months. It's super easy to do. It's super fast and it's private. No embarrassment. I don't know. You know, maybe you're the type of person who doesn't want to talk about your hair or not, but this way, listen, super easy. You're going to love it. And it's going to be either $10 or $35 a month, depending on what they recommend. And like I said, they ship a 3 month supply right to your door every 3 months. Super easy to do. And if you sign up through us, you're going to get your first month of treatment for free. Right? All you have to do is go to keeps.com/ACM. That's KEEPS.com/ACM to get a free month of treatment. And you can do that once again. I'm going to repeat this a third time because that's what they say is going to help you remember it. Keeps.com/ACM. Keeps. Hair today, hair tomorrow. It's a great tagline. I like it. And they've shown us some love by sponsoring the show. If you were concerned about your hair, love it for you to show them some love too. Alrighty, so let's see. We also have marzipan that we were going to talk about.
We do.
Yeah.
And not just the stuff on the top of cakes.
Right. So this is the thing where Apple, this is sort of already announced. Apple has said that they're going to be making it possible to bring iOS apps to the Mac. And Marzipan is apparently a developer-centric solution for making it easy to code once and publish to iPhone, iPad, and Mac.
Right. And I published a link teaser to quite an interesting piece over from another site on 9to5Mac, which got me thinking. And it was basically saying, if Marzipan works as it could and should, could be a really big deal for the Mac. Because you might start getting bigger and better apps, the kind of apps people love on their phones. You might be able to get more of that stuff on the Mac because there's going to be economic incentives and so on for developers to build apps for them. They'll be building apps that work on the Mac, basically. They won't have to just build a separate app for the Mac, which may or may not be as financially viable as a iPhone, an iOS app.
Yes.
So, first of all, excellent. More good apps for Mac. Yes, please. Thank you. Take my money.
Yes.
Second of all, it's interesting how long it's taking is really the thing. It's we're
What's
hearing
an
kind
enormous
of 20,
task.
It is an enormous task. We're kind of there seems to be some mumbling that today that it's actually slowing down a bit. It's
okay. So like, here's the big challenge, and actually, I am not as sanguine about this as you are.
Okay.
And
no, I'm pretty positive about it.
A challenge on this is the difference between a touch interface and a mouse and keyboard interface. And
quite a big challenge.
And it's quite a big challenge. And what I fear is that what will happen is we'll get a bunch of great Mac apps that are actually dumbed down because they're being done for iPad, which has less RAM to play with and has a particular form of input that is vastly different than a Mac's. It's that whole, going back to that whole letting each device be true to itself, which is a thing that Apple used to say. And
yeah.
I like the idea of having more Mac apps. There are all kinds of iOS apps that I think would be terrific and wonderful and lovely to have on the Mac. My worry is that some of them will be dumbed down and that the more complex and more complicated Mac apps won't get made in favor of the less complicated apps that actually run on iOS.
But is there anything to stop a developer saying this app is more complicated and is only for the Mac?
There would be nothing from saying it except for economic reality. If you are a developer, and this is, I'm not saying that this should be stopped because of this reason. I'm saying that this reason could have the deleterious effect that I'm talking about. Yeah. Right. If you're a developer and you're faced with right now, if you want to do a really complicated app, you probably are going to have to do it on the Mac. And if instead you are limiting your audience, you're limiting your dollars returned. Right. Unless you actually do it via Marzipan. Then I think that a lot of developers would choose to do that route, that lowest common denominator route.
Sure.
And I worry about game development from that standpoint. And I worry about I worry about complexity and feature depth. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, I totally understand those concerns that you could, because you want to get your app to the most number of people, and so the obvious way to do that is to have it on the most number of devices, and so you're going to just create an app in this Marzipan framework that, oh God, that sounds funny, doesn't it? The framework will not be made out of Marzipan, that's the code name of the project, but those apps going to all three places, obviously. Like the economic reality is probably going to encourage developers to do that. I think the demands of Mac users and the type of apps you can offer on Mac are still, in some cases, going to be unique enough that people are still going to need them, and therefore, because people need them, people will make them.
Right, and again, I want to stress, I'm not saying that I don't want Marzipan to happen. I think that Marzipan could be in many ways a fantastic thing for the Mac. What I worry about is the potential deleterious effect on feature depth and complexity that could come along with those benefits. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, no, I completely hear those concerns. Developers are going to have to take it very seriously and are going to have to kind of in a way be brave and still make stuff for the Mac, the type of stuff we need. Like, we're still going to, there are going to be a number of Mac only apps and services that we're all still going to want to need, and either Apple is going to have to find a way to incentivize developers to do that, or developers are going to have to realize that there is still a good audience there on the Mac that needs their apps, and they are going to have to keep building them. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. We will see on that. It's going to definitely be some interesting times in a... is that Sun Tzu? It's not Sun Tzu. It's Confucius. May you live in interesting times. It's a curse.
It's an old... I thought it was a Chinese... old Chinese proverb.
Yeah,
Chinese
hence curse. Sun Tzu or Confucius. I always want to attribute that to Sun Tzu, and it's not him. I think it's actually a Confucianism term of saying.
There you go.
Yeah, we could check. We could check if only we had some way of connecting to some sort of large database or repository of information. But that's not how we roll here. All right, so let's move on.
I can't think of any way we could confirm that.
Yeah, exactly. So, speaking of confirmations,
yes.
But I don't know if you notice this, by the way. But I love non sequitur segues. I revel in them.
So it's happened before.
Yeah, I revel in them. So Apple's been doing this reshuffling thing. White Angela Arendt announced that she's retiring.
Yep.
Deirdre, what's Deirdre's last name?
O'Brien.
O'Brien, yes. She's been moved from the VP of people to having HR be a part-time job.
I can't imagine there's much HR requirement in Apple, so I'm sure it's fine.
So let's actually talk specifically about this. I have staked my line in the sand that one of these two jobs is temporary for Deirdre. I don't know if it's the retail job or HR, but those are not part-time jobs. Apple retail and Apple human relations, or people as Apple likes to call it, those are not part. That's not a part-time job. Neither one of those is a part-time job. And the retail job was until recent, or is today, a senior VP job, not a VP job.
I think, isn't she getting a bump up to senior VP?
I don't think so.
I thought she was. But anyway, your point, whatever the official title is, your point absolutely still stands that
these are... One or the other.
Two massive areas.
Yeah. One or the other is temporary. She's either going to be... They're either looking for another HR person, or they're looking for another permanent retail head. And I don't know which.
Yeah, my guess is the latter.
Well...
That you're going to have a retail expert.
That's what I would have thought, too. The only thing is that Apple actually announced this. Right? They didn't, mm-hmm. they put out a big story. Oh my goodness, we're, you know, Angela's moving on and Deirdre O'Brien is stepping up.
That's not how they did the story, was it? They did the story, look, we promoted Deirdre O'Brien. Oh, yeah, by the way, Angela is leaving.
Yeah, but Angela was part of that announcement. She had her own fluff quote, meaning
She
was an active participant in the announcement.
It was all framed around Deirdre O'Brien.
Right, so like Angela has not been fired.
No, not at all.
Right, she is choosing to leave the company. I guess it's possible she was asked to leave, but I doubt that. I strongly doubt that she was asked to leave.
It seems a pretty amicable departure, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, because she's not leaving until April. Right, can you hear the noise now? Can you hear the machinery?
I can.
Yeah, let's let that pass for a second. If this appears like a non sequitur, it is, and I'm sorry. So we're going to try to pick up our thread. We were talking about Deirdre O'Brien, and we're talking about Angela Arendt. We said that Angela was definitely is voluntarily stepping out, and the question is, which of Deirdre's two jobs is temporary? And I don't know the answer.
My assumption has always been that the retail job will be the one where they get an expert in retail to come in. Apple needs to boost its retail offering again. It needs to revitalize that. I think Andrew Arendt did a really good job of moving Apple retail forward. I think it's
a huge
improvement from where it was 5 years ago when she joined. But it needs someone, an expert, to take it on to the next level. We discussed this on TDO when her departure was actually announced. And whoever, I think it may have been John Martiello, who made the point that, yes, she has done a lot of good stuff. Angela Arendt did a lot of good stuff for Apple retail. But now, actually, sorry, it was Dave Hamilton. How could I forget? And the point was that it's become a less nice experience. It's better in a lot of ways in the terms of the amount of them, the setup of the stores and so on, what the stores offer. But actually, if you need a Genius Bar appointment or you need your you need your laptop fixed, it's a much more difficult experience now.
How so? Do you agree with that? Because I don't agree with that.
So but I'm slightly spoiled in London in that I have access, very easy access where I live in London, to 3 major Apple stores.
Sure.
With another one on the other side of London. So I think London is not a good example because there are lots of stores and you're probably always likely to be able to get an appointment if you need. I can imagine in other places that is less the case.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm spoiled here too in Silicon Valley.
Right.
There's plenty here.
Right, exactly. But I did have the experience when I had a major breakdown that required that I couldn't fix and did actually require me to go to a Genius Bar that, you know, I was basically left backing up my device on my own for 2.5 hours or whatever. Now, I'm more than capable of doing that. But actually, that's not a very pleasant experience. You kind of just in a random retail store abandoned. And I think that kind of stuff has slipped a bit. It doesn't feel quite as much of a luxury experience being in the Apple store as someone being served by, say, a Genius than it used to, I think.
So I just had a Genius Bar appointment. It went swimmingly well. I had two issues. I had a HomePod that would not connect to my Wi-Fi and did not connect to their Wi-Fi until it suddenly connected to their Wi-Fi.
Mm.
And I brought it home, and then it now connects to my Wi-Fi. So, you know, there's that. And then my AirPods were distorting.
Oh.
Like people were hearing my voice with a lot of noise. So
they must really love it when you walk in.
Generally speaking, yeah, actually I've always gotten a really good experience with the Valley Fair Apple Store, which was one of the first ones here in Silicon Valley.
Nice.
So I don't know, you know, maybe I'm a bit spoiled by, you know, proximity to Cupertino.
Yeah.
So it's possible that my experience here is slightly better because everybody's on their best behavior. But I do, one way or another, I guess I really fall in your camp. I was very confused by the tone of Apple's announcement. The tone of Apple's announcement was like, you know, don't worry because we've, you know, retail is being handled by this Apple veteran. And it seems to me that Apple would have said Angela that Angela Rentz is announcing her is resigning or retiring or whatever in April, and Deirdre O'Brien is going to be a caretaker while Apple searches for a new head, and that it wouldn't have been a big news story. It just would have been a statement to the press. That to me seems like that's the way they would have handled it if that was going to be the temporary job for her.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. It just seems to me that if you look at Deirdre O'Brien's background as well, though, it doesn't immediately scream head of retail,
not,
does it?
Not even a little bit. Like, right. like putting Phil Schiller in charge temporarily would make a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, there's lots of people. Like, running retail is a hugely expert job. To be fair, so is running HR. The likelihood that you're an expert in both things is pretty minimal.
Yeah, the Venn diagram of those skills, those right. skill sets, has little or no overlap.
Exactly. But I think, so there is that, and I think we were kind of looking at this in the context of a variety of other reshuffles, right, that happened in Apple.
Yeah.
And if you look at all of those, the people they have brought in or the people they have shifted are all experts, right?
Yes, except for Deirdre
except
O'Brien.
Except for Deirdre O'Brien.
Yeah.
Look at, the brilliantly named John Casanova, who got a big promotion.
Yeah.
Expert in his field.
Yeah. The Giglio biography.
Yep.
I can never remember that guy's name. But the Google exec.
You're pronouncing it beautifully, though.
Well, except for that's not at all how it's pronounced.
No.
Okay. All right. Just to be fair. What is that guy's name? Is it John or is it Gianni?
I'm not going to try and
pronounce it. Apple head of AI.
Jadala. Sam Jadala.
No.
The smart home business guy. That's another one who is an expert in that field.
John Gianandrea? Gianandrea.
Right.
That's the
but
guy.
You also had, earlier this week, Apple hire Sam Jadala, who is an expert in home automation, and he's now leading that business.
Which is great.
And right, it is great. But these people are all specialists in those fields.
Right. And Deirdre O'Brien is not a specialist in retail.
No, exactly.
No. And Apple retail is an enormous business. It is a huge, huge, huge business. Apple makes more profit per square foot than a little company called Tiffany's. Which sells really expensive jewelry and does really good job of it. And some other stuff, too. All of which
listeners
is expensive.
Listeners can send me any Tiffany jewelry at the usual address.
Oh, that is very kind of you.
Yes.
That is very, very kind of you. But, again, yeah, Deirdre O'Brien, not so much. Which is not to denigrate her at all. She's head of HR. She's been head of HR at Apple. That makes her a badass. It's just,
She's been at Apple for 20 years. She knows what she's doing.
She knows
what
she's doing.
She's a hugely capable executive.
Right, but she's not a retail expert.
Doesn't mean she's an expert in retail.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting. And I wonder how long it will be. Why, if that is a temporary job... It's got to be a temporary job. It's a huge job. It's a huge job. It's a huge job. If it's going to be a temporary job, though, and Angela's not leaving until April, why on earth does Apple think that it can't find a... Oh, yeah, I know why. They wouldn't have waited till then, because as soon as Apple starts headhunting for a head of retail, the story breaks.
Sure.
So, and Apple, what Apple doesn't, Apple wants to be out ahead of that story, of course.
Everyone was pretty surprised
rumors.
About Angela Arendt's leaving.
Right, and it's because Apple was ahead of it, was ahead of the story. But it does seem like they could find someone in the, 2 months. I don't know, maybe not. Took him a long time to find John Brower, and he was a terrible hire. By the way, is he like back in UK retail somewhere?
Not. Hang on, we discussed this on TDO, and he was somewhere, and I can't remember off the top of my head. But the point I wanted to make actually was that we've talked about and praised Deirdre O'Brien as an Apple vet, which because she's an Apple vet, and that. Says a lot that you've lasted in such a company to such a level for so long.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily sure that's what Apple retail needs. There's an argument it needs someone from the outside to keep shaking it up.
Like Angela Renz was.
Correct. Exactly right. And if you look also, again, I go back to the other hires, because we were looking at it in this broader context of all the different hires. Quite a few of them have come from outside the company.
Some
have been promoted internally, but there is some fresh blood there, and I think that's really important.
But that fresh blood has been an expansion of the executive team rather than a replacement of the executive team.
Sure. But Apple, that's okay.
The
that's
long
good.
That I agree with that. I believe it's very good. The long running, like a lot of the team that Steve Jobs originally put together is still there.
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, Tim Cook's the CEO. Like, yeah.
Well, but it's not just Tim. I mean, Phil and Craig and Eddie Q. I mean, those people in particular were core members of Steve Jobs' team, and they remain core members of Tim Cook's team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So these outsiders are expanding Apple's executive ranks, not replacing.
Yeah, which I think is good. And I think that balance is probably very important to Apple moving forward.
Yeah, it's a stunning achievement for Tim Cook to have been able to do that, to both keep that core team in place and be able to expand it more really recently with more people from the outside.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
Oh, all right. Okay, we are out of time. Charlotte Henry.
Brian Chaffin.
I want to thank you very much for joining us.
I want to thank you very much for having me.
Indeedy do. And your book, again, is called Not Buying It.
Yes.
But I have actually already bought it.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, I was a backer of your crowdfunding.
Yes, it's an interesting publisher I'm working with, a publisher called Unbound. Do all the traditional publisher stuff, but you pledge and support and pre-order the books before they exist. And it's a really nice model. And there's some really, really great projects being written, commissioned by that publisher.
I see. That's good. Craig, congratulations on that. It's coming out in June, is this correct?
Yes.
Not
it's very exciting.
Buying it. All right. And with that, I'm going to hit these buttons and say that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Our sponsor this week has been Keeps. We very, very much appreciate Keeps. Make sure you show them some love, too. And that is all for this week.